Hello there, I'm Steve Rohr, and this is number 0472, the Stuff File Program, hosted by my pal Peter Anthony Holder, coming to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0472. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Peter Vronsky, the author of Sons of Cain, a history of serial killers from the Stone Age to the present. He believes that being serial killers is part of our evolution.
We had to be that way for approximately 300,000 years. And it's only in the last, give or take, 15,000 years that we've become civilized, that we live in societies, in villages, in cities, we grow our own food, we've developed agriculture. And so 15,000 out of 300,000 is not a lot of time for us to suppress these kinds of primitive instincts that are still very hardwired in our beings.
Peter Geiger, the publisher and editor of the Canadian Farmer's Almanac, it's a publication that features not only weather, but other useful tips.
A lot of people are talking about plastic straws and how it clogs up the waters and things of that nature. So we have an article that talks about all the different plastics that we could do away with and do something else with, whether it is the coffee pods that people use one time and throw it away or other types of plastic. We're trying to help people do away with single-use plastic and just help the environment that way.
Michael Rosenblum is the author of Happily Ever Always.
I've always been passionate about finding happiness, and I didn't start with being happy. I was a different kid. I had my share of bullying and other things that happened along the way, but those things that happened along the way shaped me. And as I had success and failures in business and in growth, I began to think about how does one really become happy? Is that something that can really exist?
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news. And, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0472 was Steve Rohr, a PR and communications expert from L.A. who can also be seen quite often in Canada on the TV show The Social on CTV and The Morning Show on Global. He's also the co-author of Scared Speechless. I thank you very much for doing the guest slate on this program, Steve. And I got to tell a very quick Steve Rohr story here before we start the show. You know, when we started this program many, many years ago, after my old radio show came to an end, it was Steve, all the way from LA, who was very helpful, very influential, very supportive at a difficult time to my getting the show started in the first place. So for that, I will be forever grateful to Steve Rohr. Thank you very much, Steve, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? The Public Works Department in San Francisco gets on average 65 calls every day with complaints about feces on the sidewalk. Public Works Director Mohamed Nuru and the city's mayor, London Breed, put their heads together and came up with a solution: the Poop Patrol. In mid-September, five Public Works employees with a steam cleaner will begin scooping up hot spots, such as around the Civic Center, Tenderloin, and South of Market neighborhoods, during the afternoons to clean up what nature has left behind. Another team also cleans overnight. Officials say the waste comes from dogs and people. Let me repeat that. And people. The mayor recently allotted about $1 million for new public restrooms. I just want the city to be clean, Mayor Breed said, and I want to make sure we're providing the resources so that it can be. Mayor, people are defecating in the streets. I think you've got a bigger problem than just keeping the city clean. Yeah. Now, in the United States, the divisions between the right and the left seem to be reaching a fever pitch. The right is coming under attack for being too stringent, too strict, and backwards in thinking. Meanwhile, the left is often described by the right as pinko socialists. So far, this has manifested itself by harsh words on social media, demonstrations and protests. But recently, a secret group of activists in Virginia may have begun a campaign to eliminate the right in a series of criminal attacks. The Roanoke News has reported that the Clean Souls shoe store has been robbed of only right shoes over the course of two break-ins this summer. Clean Souls operator Rob Wickham says his two-year-old sneaker store was raided by two people in July and again in August. Together, he lost shirts, hoodies, a jacket, and 13 right shoes. Wickham says he typically keeps right shoes on display while their other halves rest behind the counter. And I'm wondering, is that in itself a political statement? Accordingly, Wickham said the looters were, quote, pretty much risking their freedom for nothing. But have they? Seriously, have they? Is this a secret message being sent to conservative America? Or perhaps it's simpler than that. Maybe it's just someone who is stealing shoes on behalf of amputees. And speaking of politics, on August 20th, the Miami Herald endorsed Republican Benita Rodriguez Aguilera, who was running to replace Representative Ileana Ross Lettinen to represent a district that includes parts of Miami and Miami Beach. She lost her primary bid on August 28th, by the way, but that's not the interesting part of this story. Rodriguez Aguilera has been a city official and a business executive, the Herald noted, but conceded, "We realize that Rodriguez Aguilera is an unusual candidate." Now, before she was a candidate, Rodriguez Aguilera appeared on Spanish language television programs to talk about her experience of being abducted by aliens when she was 7 years old. Three beings, two women and a man, who reminded her of Jesus Christ, spoke to her telepathically and took her aboard their spaceship. Inside, she saw round seats that were there and some quartz rocks that control the ship, and she said that she has communicated with them several times since then. However, editorial page editor Nancy Ancrum didn't think Rodriguez Aguilera's beliefs or past experiences compromised her as an effective public servant. "Here's why we chose her," said Ancrum. "She's not crazy. I don't think we went off the rails here." Okay, this is what we've come to when talking about picking candidates for elections. A woman who claims to be in constant contact with aliens is the choice of a newspaper's editorial board. Doesn't that make you wonder what the qualities of the person she was running against were? Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Los Angeles police said a burglary suspect was arrested after needing to be rescued from his position between the wall and a building. The Los Angeles Police Department said a homeowner checking his security camera footage at about 11:30 p.m. saw a person wandering the property. The homeowner decided to check the property the next morning to see if anything had been disturbed, and they found the man was wedged between a wall and the home's garage. The Los Angeles Fire Department responded at about 8:10 a.m., and it took more than an hour to free the man, who had sustained minor injuries from his ordeal. It is unclear how long he had been wedged there. LAPD officer Rosario Herrera said the man was arrested on suspicion of trespassing, and police suspect he may have been involved in a nearby burglary earlier the night before. Well, I'm sure a nice jail cell is going to seem positively roomy to the place where he spent the night. And if you're going to commit crimes, by the way, in tight spaces, perhaps going on a diet is in order, either that or getting a depth perception test beforehand. Yeah. Anyway, Let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Peter Vronsky is the author of several books that study the history and psychopathology of serial killers. His latest book is Sons of Cain, a history of serial killers from the Stone Age to the present. Based in Toronto, Peter joins us on the line via Skype from New Jersey, where he's spending time interviewing a serial killer. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Let's first of all start off with the reason why you're in New Jersey. You're spending a couple of days interviewing a serial killer. I'm assuming it's for an upcoming work, right?
It is indeed. It's for a new book I'm writing called Raptor. And I'm returning back to my roots, interviewing the serial killer who got me started on serial killers back in 1979, the Times Square torso ripper, Richard Cottingham.
Wow. Now, one of the things I'm kind of concerned about is when you talk to someone who is a serial killer, someone who is behind bars, do you ever worry or concern yourself with the idea that you might be giving that person the attention they crave? Like, I know it's a balance between giving them attention and learning more about why these people are these people.
Well, you know, I think that's partly a myth that serial killers are craving attention. This individual was very difficult to persuade to meet with me. In fact, it was the daughter of one of his victims that persuaded him to sit down with me. He's been incarcerated now for 39 years, and he's only in the 39 years has given one interview. So he is not craving attention at all.
Your new book is called Sons of Cain, A History of Serial Killers from the Stone Age to the Present. The subtitle of that book catches me a little off guard, because when one thinks of serial killers, you only think back to at the most maybe the 1800s, but you're saying serial killing has been around since we have.
In fact, we are the original serial killers, all of us. That's why the title is Sons of Cain. We have to be in the pre-civilizational era, when we were living in the Stone Age. We had to be that way to survive as a species. If we weren't capable of serial killing, then, you know, you and I would not be talking today on, through all this technology. It was essential to our evolution. And my argument is that we had to be that way for approximately 300,000 years. And it's only in the last, give or take, 15,000 years that we've become civilized, that we live in societies, in villages, in cities, we grow our own food, we develop agriculture. And so 15,000 out of 300,000 is not a lot of time for us to suppress these kinds of primitive instincts that are still very hardwired in our beings. So, it's only once we come to live in a society that we have all these various societal mechanisms to inhibit these kinds of impulses, from, you know, religious prescriptions on killing wantonly to law and order and so forth that kind of tells us when it's legal and illegal to kill, rather than kill anything that scares you or frightens you or might, you know, be a danger to you possibly. So that's essentially my argument.
So it sounds like then that, as you say, we were all serial killers out of necessity at one point, just merely to survive. It makes it sound like the way you describe it, that today's modern serial killer is very reminiscent or very similar to, say, today's sports hunter.
In a way, yes. And probably today's sports hunter, as well as somebody who's found a way to satisfy those deep kind of instinctual needs to hunt and kill. So in that same way, but of course, sports hunting we've recognized as an acceptable activity. Sports killing of human beings is not. And so what happens, I argue, is that, you know, all of us probably are born with these instincts, highly developed, but good socialization, happy family, a good parental upbringing, and so forth, unmakes the majority of us. And what remains are essentially the serial killers and other kinds of violent offenders, not only serial killers, but essentially people who act on these primordial instincts and don't have the capability to inhibit them.
So what is it about serial killers that don't allow them to develop like the rest of us do?
Well, one of the things, of course, we find is early childhood trauma. Most serial killers, as children, had very difficult childhoods. And what happens, of course, is when that happens, kids get a sense of, say, when they're abused, they get a sense of a loss of control. And they, sometimes as early as 5 years old, they begin developing these fantasies of revenge and control. And that essentially is what motivates most serial killers, the need to control their victim, to possess them. And so a child will develop that early in their life. They once they hit puberty, they'll sexualize it as well. And, you know, by the average age of around 28, more or less, they'll act out their first, you know, their first killing often. The problem, of course, for all of us, you know, criminologists, psychologists, and so forth, is that millions of children have abusive backgrounds. They don't necessarily all become serial killers. So there is still some factors that we have not yet understood. You know, that X factor, why some traumatized children become productive members of society, while others become not only serial killers, but again, different offenders. And at this point, I would not discount old-fashioned biblical evil yet, for whatever that might be. So we don't know. The more we study serial killers, the less we understand about them. We still, that elusive X factor remains out of our grasp.
The majority of serial killers are men, but that doesn't mean all serial killers are men. Is there something different about a serial killer who is a woman?
Well, the motive, again, is very similar to the male, the need to control their victim, to take their victim completely under control. But they express that need in different ways. For men, of course, it involves often abduction, sexual assault, mutilation, and so forth. For females, unless they're acting with a male partner, in which case they'll start mirroring the male sexuality, but with females operating on their own, they're satisfied with just killing the victim. And that, in fact, makes female serial killers much more efficient as killing machines than it does the male. A female serial killer statistically has twice the length of career before they're apprehended than your average male serial killers. Women are much better at getting away with it, partly because of also the nature of their victims. They often kill victims with whom they already have a relationship as a caregiver. So, say, for example, nurses killing their patients, home care workers killing their charges, mothers killing their children. So that's the difference. You know, women tend not to want to torture and mutilate their victim. They go straight for the kill. And I should say that approximately one in six serial killers is a woman. So we're talking about, you know, 16, 17%. And it used to be, of course, that we thought that women preferred to kill people they had some kind of intimate relationship with, and that too is a myth. Today, female serial killers, more than half of them, prefer strangers as their victims.
Is there anything to be culled from the frequency or the amount of time between serial killings that a particular serial killer might have? Does that say anything about him or her?
It does. You sometimes see a kind of escalation taking place where, you know, what happens with a serial killer, of course, is once they first kill, having had this fantasy for, you know, perhaps as early as the age of five, and if they're 28, we're talking about 22, 23 years that they've nurtured this fantasy, and now they've acted upon it. And anybody who has lived out their fantasy, whatever that fantasy is, knows that very rarely the fantasy is, the reality is at all like the fantasy. And so now, having nurtured this fantasy for over 20 years, the serial killer suddenly discovers, my God, you know, this is nothing like my fantasy. And now they can't return back to the fantasy world that was comforting them. And usually what goes wrong in the fantasy is the one thing they couldn't calculate upon, and that's the behavior of the victim. Victims often do not react or behave the way they fantasized they did. And so now they find they have this need to improve upon the realization of their fantasy. And every time they fail to make that improvement, every time they fail to realize their fantasy, they find this need to try again and do it better and better. And so what in the end happens is it you know, depends on the serial killer, but we begin to see often they get into this kind of frenzied escalation, and so the serial killings are now beginning to become more frequent. And when you see that, you can pretty much guess that we have here a serial killer that is beginning to cycle out, and either they will have a complete character breakdown. For example, you know, Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy began as a very careful, meticulous serial killer. By the end of his career, after he had escaped from prison to Florida, he was now just kind of this lurching, sloppy monster who is very quickly apprehended by a routine police patrol. There's not even any kind of special task force that hunts down Ted Bundy in Florida. The other serial killers will retire, like the Golden State Killer, until DNA catches up to them. You know, he hadn't killed for decades. So you have serial killers like Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, the BTK killer, Dennis Radar. These serial killers retired and essentially stopped killing until DNA caught up with them.
Interesting topic indeed. Your latest book is called Sons of Cain, A History of Serial Killers from the Stone Age to the Present. Peter, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thanks for having me on. My pleasure.
Peter Vronsky, author of Sons of Cain, A History of Serial Killers from the Stone Age to the Present. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0472, and you'll find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the common folk. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the publisher and editor of the Canadian Farmer's Almanac. Plus, we'll meet the author of Happily Ever Always. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, you know the old saying that starts with, when life hands you lemons? The important part is you were handed the lemons. You didn't take them. A California sheriff's office said deputies conducted a traffic stop and arrested a man found to be transporting 800 pounds of stolen lemons. The Riverside County Sheriff's Office said deputies were investigating a string of recent agricultural thefts when they conducted the traffic stop. The sheriff's office said Los Angeles resident 69-year-old Donizio Fierros was found to be transporting about 800 pounds of freshly picked lemons that had been illegally taken from a nearby farm. Wow. Crime can be sour. I'm sure they'll try to squeeze a confession out of him. I mean, this is a serious case. It's not pulp fiction. Well, moving right along. A Kentucky man was arrested in the cafeteria of Baptist Health Corbin Hospital after he faked a heart attack to get a free ride there. Police said they received a call about a stolen gun and identified 35-year-old Kenneth Ray Couch as the suspect. Deputies say they were alerted that Couch had just been taken to the hospital after suffering a heart attack at a nearby business. It turns out Couch faked his heart attack, and when the ambulance arrived at the hospital, he jumped out and casually walked to the cafeteria and grabbed something to eat. While he was enjoying his food, officers from the Knox County Sheriff's Office arrived and took him into custody. He was charged with burglary and falsely reporting an incident. Officials said they discovered he had a bench warrant for his arrest in another Kentucky county for writing bad checks. Wow, you know, Kenneth, the heart attack faker, is only 35 years old. If he were older, I'd say maybe he grew up watching Sanford and Son. That's perhaps a possibility about where he got the idea from.
I've never had pains like this before. Oh, this is the worst one I ever had, son. Oh, it's the worst one. This is a big one. I'm dying. You hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you, honey.
By the way, how discerning can his taste buds be if he wants to go to the hospital to eat the food? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. In Port St. Lucie, Florida, Joseph Cerici was arrested on a battery charge. A St. Lucie County Sheriff's deputy went to Cerici's home. His girlfriend said Cerici was drunk on the living room floor when she got home from work. The girlfriend said Cerici accompanied her and her daughter to another home where Cerici continued to drink and be belligerent. On the way home, she said, Cerici started grabbing her hand and pulling her arm. Further, she said Cerici continued by giving her a wet willy, sticking his finger in her ear. The daughter of Cerici's girlfriend confirmed her mother's account. Okay. So, when Joseph goes to jail and the other inmates ask him what he's in for, and he tells them that he's in there for giving his girlfriend a wet willy, he's going to get the crap beaten out of him just for kicks. Because nothing says badass prison cred like someone who dishes out a wet finger to the ear. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? One of the things we always talk about near the end of the summer is the arrival of the latest edition of the Canadian Farmer's Almanac. The 2019 edition is now out. They've been publishing since 1818. Now on the line with us right now, as he is every year, is Pete Geiger, the publisher and editor of the Canadian Farmer's Almanac. He joins us on the line from Maine. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Peter. Good to be with you. It always is good to be with you. So another year and we're back. How's that?
Yes, and we've done this every year for years. And I know a lot of times when people talk about the Canadian Farmer's Almanac or any almanac, the either the Canadian or the American one, the one thing they always tend to bring up is, of course, the weather. And I've always tried to go a little beyond the weather when talking to you, because the Canadian Farmer's Almanac is so much more than weather. But I got to start with weather this time around, only because, you know, we talk about it before the year, before when like, you know, if we talk about 2019, we're going to be talking about next year. We never look back to see how accurate you are. But I have the 2018 almanac in my hand. As a matter of fact, I have all the almanacs from the previous years. And you're bang on all the time.
Well, I wish I was bang on all the time. However, I would be happy if I'm 80% accurate, which is what people tell me I am. But, I think last year, the past 12 months have been about as good as I could ever hope to get, given the fact that we're doing these predictions 2 years in advance. But last year, we called for a cold winter, heavy snowfall. There was five different storms that we earmarked as being the storms, and we hit them either on the day or within a day or so, and that's not bad at all. And then it was rather cool in many places until July 1st, and then July 1st we said it was going to be in the 90s, 100 degrees at least Fahrenheit, and that's exactly what it was. So and we said it would be a hot, muggy summer. So all in all, I think it's been a pretty good prediction, and now we look forward to the next one, because I'm only as good as the next one.
And as I always say, people should get their almanacs and plan accordingly, because that's one of the things that's great about the edition each and every year. Now, what are some of the features and some of the articles that you're most proud of for this edition of the almanac?
Well, a lot of people are talking about plastic straws and how it clogs up the waters and things of that nature. So we have an article that talks about all the different plastics that we could do away with and do something else with. So whether it is the coffee pods that people use one time and throw it away, or other types of plastic, we're trying to help people do away with single-use plastic and just help the environment that way. Although today I read that there was something like one-third of the trash in the oceans happens to be cigarette butts, which that's a little discouraging. But this year we have a story about if you don't have a lot of room to garden, we have all kinds of ways in which you can do a little bit of gardening, whether you're in a balcony in an apartment, or whether you have a swimming pool. You could take, and I have a friend who's done this, I think it's 10 different 5-gallon buckets, puts dirt in them, and grows a different plant in each one, and he has it around his swimming pool so that animals don't get to it, and if it gets cold tonight, he can just move it inside. So there's some clever things there. Then there's always the life, what I call life hacks. For example, I have a new building here, and so when it's all glass, so when you are cleaning glass from one side, you wipe it horizontally, and the other side you do it vertically. That way you know which side you've missed if there's some streaking. And then if you have a natural de-icer is some coffee grounds. So you have leftover coffee grounds, you can throw it on your driveway, and it helps you get traction under your foot. And then when you're breaking eggs, I always break it on an edge of something, and then usually some shells fall in. And if you just take an egg and hit it on a flat surface, it eliminates the little chips, but it breaks the egg. So there's a lot of really kind of cool, cool ideas that we have that I think help make life easier for people. And then last year we had a contest for anything with garlic, and we have the three winners in the almanac. And then this year we're going with quinoa, which is a very healthy ingredient. And so people can apply and win one of our prizes if they have a recipe that's good enough.
Now, I know you publish both the Canadian and the American versions. How, generally speaking, how different are they from year to year? And does that percentage of difference change?
I think there's always a handful of Canadian stories, that are unique to Canada, and then obviously U.S. stories. But then there's any number of stories that are quite frankly similar, just like the plastic story. So we have a story about what did we do before there was air conditioning, and what did we do before there was toilet paper. Those are a couple of items that fit both the United States and Canada. In fact, a lot of our material is good for both the United States and Canada. So we have some items in the Canadian edition that are not in the U.S., and we have some vice versa. We have this year we have Canada trivia, and we have bits of trivia about each of the provinces. So it's unique. Probably 20 or 30% unique in Canada to the United States. And of course, the weather is all different. So, you try to honor both countries, but at the same time, the Farmer's Almanac and some of the wit and wisdom is the same no matter where you live.
As you know, most of us here in Canada straddle the American border, and of course we have great friends on the other side of the American border. Do you have people who actually buy both copies of the almanac?
Yeah, I think we do, actually. And you know, I live in Maine, and Maine is literally surrounded by Canada. We only have New Hampshire touching us, and a lot of people like to get both issues. And I think people do. And people can also go online. There's farmersalmanac.com, and you can click U.S. or Canadian, and you can get information that way. I'm hoping people will pick it up in the store. It's got the orange and green cover, but there's also electronic ways to get our information.
And I know you do this every day. You're the editor, so you're working always on the next almanac each and every day. But in this one, in the 2019 one, what was for you the article or the topic that was an aha moment for you?
Well, I think it was all the plastic stuff, because one of my staff people is very, very adamant about not using plastic straws and not polluting, and I've always been somebody who doesn't want to pollute. So I think that was one of my aha moments, because some of the numbers are staggering. There's something like 500 million styrofoam cups that we use. There's something like 750 billion plastic straws that we use. We use 1,500 plastic bottles per second in North America. And so the numbers are so staggering that there's got to be better ways to do things. And so that was one of them. But I think my favorite articles are what do we do before toilet paper and what do we do before air conditioning, because before all this stuff, before all these inventions, people somehow survived. And in the case of toilet paper, obviously you use leaves. Or you might take a piece of a newspaper and cut it, or Farmer's Almanac for that matter, and then people use corn cobs, and that apparently was a pleasant experience. Apparently, and as a matter of fact, I read that when toilet paper came out, people in the Midwestern regions of Canada and the United States still used the corn cob because it was such a plentiful thing. And you could also use, by the way, a dry corn cob to be a fire starter. So there's so many great things, as you said, in the Farmer's Almanac. Last couple weekends, I've had to cook for a bigger crowd. So let's say a dozen ear of corn, you put it in a cooler, you boil 2 quarts of water, boil water, pour it into the cooler with the corn in it and a couple sticks of butter, and close the cover, and 30 minutes later, it's all cooked for you.
Wow. Now, the new one comes out every year, people today are online. There is information people can get by going to your online pages as well.
Yes, oh, absolutely. I mean, you can go online anytime and get a lot of the information that's in the book, but the book has it all. But online, when we say online, on Facebook, we have 1.2 million Facebook followers. We do 3 or 4 postings every single day. I have a free newsletter that we send out every Wednesday. If you go to my site and sign up, you don't have to do anything. We don't do anything with the names. It's just you get a free newsletter. And then there's a membership thing where you can sign up. It doesn't cost you anything, but you have more privileges. I think you can see more long-term weather than you can just by going to the site. So there's a lot of opportunities online. And then even in the book this year, a lot of the stories force you or shove you onto the electronic version, so you can get more information about whatever we're talking about in the almanac itself.
And for those who want the hard copy Dead Tree version, as usual, each and every year, where can they find the latest edition of the Canadian Farmer's Almanac?
We should be in any store where they're selling magazines, and if we're not, if you don't see us, then by all means, farmersalmanac.com. There's a thing called shop, and you can get it that way too.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Peter. Thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you very much.
Pete Geiger, the publisher and editor of the Canadian Farmer's Almanac. You can check out their website at farmersalmanac.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0472, and you'll find links to their website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you seen the amusing warning label on a pillow that's making the rounds on social media? It's about a foot and a half long. There's a lot of confusion about pillow tags. Can we remove them or not? However, if you actually make a pillow, they're not only confusing, they're expensive. Carrie Smith was expecting her first child when she developed a unique pillow that made her more comfortable. Other pregnant women loved it too, so she started selling them. Then, she discovered that 15 states have special regulations just for pillows. She said all of the governmental red tape was the toughest part of starting her business. Let's be fair, selling a pillow isn't easy in America. One of the winners in our annual Wacky Warning Labels contest was found on a travel pillow made specifically for children. It's a great product, but it actually came with a warning label saying, "Keep product away from children." With all of these warnings, it's no wonder so many of us have a hard time sleeping at night. Learn more at centerforamericatv.org.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. This broadcast is coming to you from upstairs. Get out of the house.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Happily Ever Always. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. But I've got one more Stuff File news story I want to share with you here on a program that you'll also find on either Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts. You'll find the buttons for both when you go to thestufffile.com. It's as easy as that. Okay, you at least have to admire the ingenuity of the couple in this next story. A Florida couple was arrested last week after they were caught allegedly selling drugs out of a drive-thru window they constructed out of the side of their mobile home. 32-year-old William Parrish Jr. and 20-year-old Mackenzie Dobbs of Ocala, Florida, were arrested on August 23rd after investigators raided their mobile home following reports of four drug overdoses in the area. Ocala police said the couple had turned a kitchen window into a drive-thru so customers would not have to constantly enter and exit their home, potentially drawing unwanted attention. The house had signs directing people where to drive and indicated whether it was open or closed. Like that wouldn't draw attention. Anyway, we were seeing some overdose incidents that were happening in this particular area, specifically at this particular location, said Ocala Police Captain Stephen Cuppy. There were some heroin sales that were going on there. Subsequently, through the investigation, we were able to determine that product was laced with fentanyl. Parrish was charged with driving under the influence, keeping a dwelling used to sell drugs, possession of drugs with intent to sell, and resisting arrest without violence. Dobbs has been charged with keeping a dwelling used for selling drugs, possession of drugs with intent to sell, possession of fentanyl, and possession of fentanyl with intent to sell. William Parrish Sr., and he must be proud to share that name, said his son had been trying to get himself straightened out and maintained reports of overdoses were a lie. Well, are you saying it's fake news, Pops? I mean, seriously, nobody's buying that excuse from more accomplished people. All the things that are going on, the fact that your son built a drive-through window to sell drugs, and this is the concern you're taking away from all this. Yeah. Nice dad. Father knows best. Not. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? September is Self-Improvement Month. With that in mind, we are joined by Michael Rosenblum. He's a top-selling real estate broker who has written the book Happily Ever Always, a top-selling real estate broker's secret guide to confidence, contentedness, and security. Michael joins us on the line right now from Chicago. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. So how does a well-known and well-respected and top-selling real estate broker end up writing a book called Happily Ever Always?
Well, I think to begin, it's the fact that I have just always had a book within me, and through my own trials and tribulations, I have come to realize that we are all made up of happiness within ourselves if we try to find our own personal religion of truth. It's something that I'm just very passionate about. I've always been passionate about finding happiness, and I didn't start with being happy. I was a different kid. I had my share of bullying and other things that happened along the way, but those things that happened along the way shaped me. And as I had success and failures in business and in growth, I began to think about how does one really become happy? Is that something that can really exist? Can we really carve a path for ourselves of happiness? And why shouldn't we live happy? Why can't we always live happy? The whole idea of happily ever after is a fallacy because we're gone after. After what? We're always entitled to live happily ever. So I basically did a lot of self-discovery, and I started to look at my entire process of life thus far of 54 years and my trials and tribulations, and I began to sort of map out different things, and I basically and humbly just came to some conclusions that we can be very happy if we find our own personal truth, and that's where it begins.
Okay, so you're obviously a very successful, as we mentioned, a real estate broker, so that means you're a very busy man in your day-to-day life. You're taking this personal journey to find happiness beyond the success that you're having. At what point did you decide that the happiness you were seeking is something that you need to share with others in the form of this book?
Great question, Peter. I think that it just happened over time. I truly believe that we're all entitled to always live happily ever. I feel like there's a lot going on in the world today. There's a lot of people who are upset, they feel disconnected, they feel bullied, and it's wrong. It's wrong to feel that way. We were put here on this earth to really be happy. The whole idea of are you going to die and go to heaven or hell is a fallacy. We live heaven or hell right on earth, and I really, really truly believe that people should be able to live in heaven within their daily lives. And it does take work, and it is difficult, and it is painful, but we can get there, and we have the right to get there, and that's what's important for everyone in the world to understand, is that we're all entitled to be happy. We weren't put here to be miserable. We sometimes imprison ourselves. You know, it's sort of the idea when somebody does something to us, that was terrible, why did you do that to me? Well, but it's the idea that you can remove yourself from certain situations. For instance, Peter, think about work. There are people who stay in jobs and they're really unhappy, but they stay in that job because they feel like they need that paycheck. Okay, I appreciate that. I've been there in life. I stayed in a job in my 30s where I wasn't happy, but I sort of prostituted myself for the money. And it wasn't until I said, no, I'm not going to do this. I hate waking up and going to this place every day. I have to go ahead and take my strength and believe that I'm worthy to do something else. And I have to find it. Someone's not going to knock on my door and say, hey, I got the perfect job for you today. It's me having to do the work. And that's also part of the fact that if I'm in a happy state of mind, I'm going to be more productive. I'm going to be able to be more proactive. Now, and I think that's what's important.
Now, you mentioned there are seven ways to live happily ever always. So can you give us a list of why these seven are so important to you?
Absolutely. Well, you know, first of all, keep your commitments. That's an important one. Most people don't remember the simple fallacy. Most people don't think that their word is their bond, and yet their word is absolutely their bond. Think about what you would want somebody to do for you, and then you need to give it back to them. So ask yourself how you would feel when somebody makes a commitment and doesn't keep it. It's not very happy. You know, the next thing that I think is important, number two, is to start where you are. It's never too late. The idea that don't let your circumstances determine your future, because it's a springboard. First and foremost, Change is not constant, and that's evidenced in nature by the changing of the seasons. Second of all, don't pressure yourself. You are on your own clock, and that comes with the idea that if you sort of think about a kernel of corn, you take that little kernel and you put it in the ground, and through a lot of nurturing and time, it eventually becomes a stalk. Start where you are. It's the idea, hey, Estee Lauder, the cosmetics queen, didn't start her company until she was 48. And Colonel Sanders of Kentucky Fried Chicken didn't find his recipe until age 50. So I don't think it matters where you are in your life. If you want to start something, then the moment that you believe that you want to start something, that's the pinnacle time. That's the time to begin.
Now,
because evidently you have that inclination.
You have seven, and I want to gloss over a few of them because I want to get to one in particular. For instance, I understand number three is make meaningful connections. Number four is listen to your gut, not your wallet. And we can talk about that in a moment. Number five is exchange your thinking about change. Number six is the one I want to get to. Don't wish your villains away. I find that a very interesting one. Why do you say that?
Oh, I think this is an important one. Because I've come to learn in my life, yes, we all have people who have bullied us or been mean, or we had an ugly boss or something of that nature. But you want to know something? Those people can teach us things. Those people not only teach us the way we don't want to be, but sometimes when we have those people who are villains in our lives or hateful, if we step back and don't react to what's going on, but yet sort of think about how we can better ourselves from the situation, we can learn a lot.
And one of the things, I mean, I mentioned in the introduction that you're a successful real estate broker. If you go through the press material about your book, it mentions how successful you are. But that goes back to number four, listen to your gut, not your wallet. Because let's be honest, you can be successful. You can sell millions of dollars worth of homes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you yourself are happy. But you are happy. So what is the difference between successful and happiness?
Successful and happiness is real simple. The idea is you need to find your personal truth. My happiness comes from the fact that I am emotionally secure with myself. I want to be me. Well, maybe in my next life I'd like to be 4 inches taller, but basically I want to be me. I've had my ups and downs in life, and I suppose that everything that I've been able to achieve, I'm just grateful and humbled by. And I think that humility is what allows me to continuously feel very happy inside.
When you wrote this book, who was the person you were trying to reach the most with your book?
I'm trying to reach anyone and everyone who wants to feel happy. I think that it's a book that helps a lot of young people, and I think at the same time it helps people who are feeling midlife crisis. I think it's people who need to step back and think about what it is that they want out of life instead of continuing just their monotonous routine. It's anybody who is at any point in their life feeling like they're unfulfilled.
I left out number seven because you mentioned the six of the seven ideas that you share for making one's life happily ever always. Number seven is, when all else fails, get moving. What do you mean by that?
Well, big change and lost opportunities often paralyze us, leaving us stuck in a rut. And it's the idea that you have to get back in the game as fast as possible. If you're not, you're only wasting valuable time. Happily ever always is waiting for you.
And that's a great note to leave it on. Michael, the book is called Happily Ever Always. I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you so much, Peter. Have a great day.
Michael Rosenblum, author of Happily Ever Always, a top-selling real estate broker's secret guide to confidence, contentedness, and security. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0472, and you'll find links to Michael's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
A man named Tang from Sichuan Province, China, promised his girlfriend, Yang, yes, that's right, Yang and Tang, that he would buy an expensive luxury car for her. The only problem was that he didn't have the money, so he cooked up a scheme inviting Yang and her brothers to the Chengdu car dealership on August the 16th, where he had allegedly put down a $10,000 yen payment. Tang asked the group to wait there while he went to get the cash, but instead, he went to a supermarket and bought a fruit knife. Outside, he found a secluded spot and cut up his own arms, then called Yang and said he had been robbed at knife point of the 750,000 yen he had supposedly withdrawn for the car. While her brothers took Tang to the hospital, Yang waited for police, who eventually excised the story from Tang. He was sentenced to 10 days in jail and a 500 yen fine. Now, why, oh why, would you mutilate your own arms with a fruit knife in order to get out of a lie about not having money to buy a luxury car for your girlfriend? But once confronted with what is clearly a flawed plot to begin with, you fold like a cheap lawn chair? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0472. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links to all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0472. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing this show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.